This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A lot more of us went out and bought cars, clothes, and washing machines last month, according to the latest government figures. Americans spent over $300 billion in July, almost up almost 1.5% over June. It's a sign, economists say, that the economy is gaining a bit of momentum. Cold comfort, though, for those looking for work. Employment is down more than 1 million since the recovery started. Today, at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, President Bush met with his economic team. Topic A, what the government can do to create more jobs. This hour, a mini-job summit with two different views. We'll also talk about the export of more and more white-collar jobs to other countries. And we want to hear from you, especially if you run a business or plan to start one. What'll it take for you to start hiring? To get in on the conversation, give us a phone call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Jared Bernstein, a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, a public policy research organization here in Washington. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
And in our bureau in New York is David Weiss, the chief economist at Standard & Poor's. And thank you very much for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Just about a half an hour ago, President Bush spoke to reporters after his meeting with his top economic advisors on pocketbook issues. Again, the main subject was jobs, and here's an excerpt of what he had to say.
This administration is optimistic about job creation. We believe strongly that the tax relief plan that was approved by Congress in 01 and most recently in 03 is going to have a very positive effect on economic growth and vitality. We believe it is more likely in the upcoming year that people are going to be able to find a job, and that's exactly where we focused our policy. But I also know there's more that can be done.
And let's get a reaction to that first. Jared Bernstein?
Well, I think the president is probably correct that the amount of fiscal stimulus, the tax cuts and the spending that's also related to defense and the war effort, will give the economy a boost in the second half of the year. That's widely agreed upon by economists. But this, as you mentioned in the introduction, we are now down 1 million jobs from when the recovery got started. Not the recession, the recovery. This is the worst recovery on record. By this time, in every other post-war recovery, we had positive job growth by this time. And in many cases, we'd made back the losses that occurred over the recession. In order for the Bush administration to even get back to zero, that is to replace the number of jobs that were lost over the president's term, they're going to have to post some pretty serious numbers, and that may or may not occur. So he's certainly right. You can't throw this many billions at the economy without something good happening. I would also agree that much more needs to occur.
David Weiss?
Well, fundamentally, I think Jared is right. You throw a $455 billion deficit out there and you're going to get some response, and it's going to create some jobs for the next year or so. I worry about what happens when the stimulus runs out, which will happen by the end of next year, safely after the election, but still, you know, some of us will be around then. And at this point, I just don't see where the next act is going to come from. We've got to get some extra strength in this economy if we're going to get the unemployment rate back down.
Well, before we start talking about ideas of how to create jobs, we need a definition of just what a jobless recovery is. David Weiss, this is not the first one we've had, 93, right?
No, this looks an awful lot like 91, 92, except even more so. In 91, 92, the unemployment rate didn't peak until 15 months into the economic expansion. This time, assuming June was the peak, it was 19 months. That's not a lot different, but there's no question. It's weak. This is basically a half-speed economic expansion, with growth around 3% instead of the normal 6%, with full-speed productivity growth, so employment's actually declining.
And Mr. Bernstein, what do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting that we've got such an unemployment problem, a job growth problem, and we talk about a recovery. And that's really because the way that the official recession daters do these things, employment is just one factor they consider. The economy has been expanding, and so they're absolutely correct in telling us that a recovery did begin in late 2001. But the key point is that the economy is growing too slowly. Positive growth in GDP, the broadest measure of economic growth, is not enough to lower the unemployment rate or to create enough jobs to really make a difference in this economy. For that to happen, the economy has to expand at a rate of at least 3.5% per year. Now, thus far, we've had growth rates in the 1% to 2% range, so we're still a bit away from what we need in terms of growth.
David Weiss, consumer spending is said to be the engine of economic growth, or at least it has been over the previous boom. Is what we saw in June and July, is that going to be enough to stimulate some employment?
Oh, I think clearly it is. The problem is we're buying a lot. Consumers are doing our part. Let's face it, we're spending every dollar we got. But the problem is we're not getting the usual business spending on top of that. And a lot of what we're buying is not being produced in the United States anymore. It's being produced overseas, so it's creating jobs in China, not in the U.S. That's a real problem for the U.S. economy.
That's not a new problem either. First it was blue-collar jobs that a lot of people said were exported, and then it was now it is white-collar jobs. I guess IBM and Reuters, the most recent to announce that, they're sending some jobs overseas, white-collar jobs that were previously located, I guess, in the state of New York in those two particular cases.
Let me raise a point about that. This is the first recession/weak recovery wherein employment opportunities for more highly educated workers have actually declined more, and actually and considerably more, than those of, say, workers with high school or even less education. The decline in the employment rates of high school dropouts has been pretty marginal. College graduates, their employment rates are down a couple of percentage points. It's quite unusual. It's a very broad-based recession in that regard. It's hit manufacturing. It's hit financial services. It's hit actually most sectors outside of, say, healthcare and housing have felt the brunt.
And David Weiss, another issue, productivity continues to rise, but that hasn't led to more job creation.
Well, it doesn't in the short run. Productivity helps in the long run. It helps incomes even in the short run because it's holding inflation down, and those of us who still have jobs are getting income gains as a result, at least in real terms. But the problem is that with strong productivity, you need more demand, and we're not getting enough more demand to compensate for it. I think part of the problem here, too, is international. One of the reasons productivity is so strong is that American manufacturers have got to compete in a very competitive workplace with a lot of spare capacity overseas. The rest of the world's recovering even more slowly than we are. With a dollar that's too strong, with a huge trade gap, the only way to survive is by pushing for huge productivity gains, which they're doing.
Can I add one point to that? We hear, this is actually implicit in what David was saying as well, sometimes the way this is framed, it's almost as if commentators are blaming the jobless recovery on fast productivity growth. The reason why we're not creating enough jobs is because we're too productive. But let me throw out a factoid here that I think is relevant. On average, 6 quarters into the recovery, which is where we are now, if you look back at every post-war recovery, productivity has grown at 4% annual rate. Right now, it's growing at a 4.3% annual rate. So just about the same. Productivity usually does grow pretty quickly out of the trough. Yet on average, in all these past recoveries, we've been adding jobs by this time at a rate of 3% per year. Now we're losing jobs at a rate of about 1% per year. The difference, as David correctly pointed out, is weak demand. So don't blame productivity for the jobless recovery. Blame weak demand. And that helps us, helps point the direction to ways in which we need, or probably more accurately, needed to correct this problem.
And that leads us to the big question. So, given the situation that you've all just described, what do we do to create more jobs? And Jared, why don't you go first?
Well, we are constrained right now because the fiscal situation is such that it's unlikely to allow us to implement any particularly good ideas. I mean, the administration and Congress have pretty much spent all they're going to spend on stimulating the economy, and it hasn't done the trick thus far. So I guess the way I think of the question is, what should we have done? And if we do want to engage in more deficit spending, what should we do? An appropriate stimulus ought to be temporary. That's certainly not been the case thus far in what we've seen. It should be fiscally responsible. Clearly not the case. We now have, $4 trillion of deficits out there 10 years.
There are people who would disagree with you on that.
Well, that number is from the Center on Budget Policy Priority.
Not on the number, on the characterization.
Oh, okay. And it should take effect quickly. A couple of ideas that actually might be implementable in the current domain. Another extension of unemployment insurance is a great idea. It's something Congress has done already twice, but A fifth of the unemployed have been unemployed for at least half of a year, and they're starting to lose their unemployment benefits because, as you mentioned in the introduction, there just aren't enough jobs out there. So extending unemployment insurance is a great way to both meet the needs of the unemployed and help stimulate the economy. Get a lot of bang for the buck out of that one. State fiscal relief. This is a big one. There's only $20 billion in the last tax package for state fiscal relief. That doesn't cover half of California's deficit. States are really strapped, and they're beginning to cut services, which is exactly what you, and raise taxes, exactly what you don't want at this point in the recovery. Those are my two top choices for things that are possible. Better targeted tax relief would have been appropriate, but that's probably not going to happen now.
David Weiss, same question to you.
Well, I agree with that the extension of unemployment benefits is probably necessary, but I think that's a palliative. It doesn't really create jobs, except in the case that any kind of government spending creates jobs. But it is, I think, a necessary policy. At this point, though, we are where we are. We're not going to get anything more out of fiscal policy. And I think what we really need to work on is trade policy. We're running a $500 billion deficit. That's almost 5% of GDP. If we were in balance there, if that resulted in extra production, that would be about 3% more jobs and a roughly 2% lower unemployment rate.
And that has to do with what you said earlier about you feel the dollar is overvalued.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with exporting jobs to overseas as long as we import enough jobs to offset it. That's what trade is about. Well, and the problem is that we're not importing them now.
Let's get some listeners involved. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Stephen is on the line with us, and Stephen's in Fort Lauderdale.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Stephen.
Hi. There's two approaches. I'm opening up it's going to be a fairly large discount health care package for people who don't qualify for insurance, and I'm willing to pay three times the amount to my people, but I'm going to pay on a performance. To combat the crisis, I'm going to a pay-per-performance where I'll take a better quality person, pay them three times the amount, but they only get paid when they perform. The second approach I've taken is I've added technology to cut my marketing budget by 92%. The thing is, I'm combating the federal government. The federal government is restricting me in every which way they can, because what I have taken is I've taken a computer system, turned it to an auto dialer, and a blast emailer, and a fax broadcaster. And that cut my marketing budget by 92-93% and increased my profits by 600%. But now, as of October 25th, a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is going to be illegal. So not only am I fighting the crisis, but I'm fighting the government at the same time.
Government restrictions, whatever you think about his auto dialer. David?
Frankly, if he's the one that's doing all the auto dialing while I'm trying to eat dinner and sending me all the spam, I'm quite happy about the government policy.
Actually, I follow a do-not-call list, and I comply with it, but you would be surprised how many people actually are. I just bought a new home. I'm a very busy man. I need an alarm system. If an auto dialer called me right now and said, here's a free alarm system, press 1, I would be the one that would take it. A lot of people respond to this type of marketing. Maybe not you, but a lot of people do. And those people have the option to be removed that don't want to be called.
Well,
however, it does cut your overhead incredible. I'm talking in the 90 percentile and increase your profit 400-600%.
We have Stephen, can I ask you a question? You think you'd be hiring anybody in the near term?
Yes. Starting next week, I'm looking. I got 100 seats that I have to fill, and I'm going on a strictly paid by performance. When I recruit these people, I know I'm competing, but I'm going to offer three times the amount. In other words, if I pay them by hourly versus I'm going to a paid by performance, paid by on a sale. And this is for a healthcare coverage company that I've opened up. Healthcare coverage.
Stephen, we wanted to continue this conversation with you. We need to take a short break. Can you hang on the line with us for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. Thanks very much. We're going to put Stephen on hold and continue our conversation with him after we return from a break. We're speaking with Jared Bernstein and David Weiss about what we can do to create more jobs. If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a small business, give us a phone call. Tell us what your economic climate is like. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about how to increase job growth in this sluggish economy, and we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can send us email. The address is TOTN at NPR.org. When we were going to the break, Stephen was on the line with us in Fort Lauderdale. And Stephen, you were saying that you're just planning to hire 100 people?
Yes, and what I'm doing is, historically, my competitors are paying by the hour and then paying a bonus on a commission. I'm the triple, let's use the word commission, and go strictly paid by performance. I think I'll get a better quality person, and I'll cut my overhead. I might run through more people. I also have my PhD in the psychology of organizational development. And I think that this is what companies, this type of performance, paid by performance, is what more and more companies are going to have to look to. I went to a car wash the other day, and at the car wash, I was sitting there looking at it and analyzing it, and I said, you know what? If I opened up a car wash, I could pay people by performance, pay them a commission. I started talking with the owner, and the owner actually changed over to the plan that I laid out for him. And he's got more people willing to line up. He does not have an employment problem anymore. He pays people half of what he brings in for a simple car wash. And I think that this is what the future is going to go to. More people are going to have to produce more and get paid by performance, and that's going to be the change in our public opinion.
Okay, let's get a reaction to that. Jared, is that the future?
Well, you know, I'm a little nervous about this notion of pay for performance, especially in a weak economy, because someone who's engaged in sales, which is what Stephen's talking about, could be a perfectly fine salesperson, but in a weak economy can't sell anything through no fault of their own. So I think it's important that there be a base wage that's just yours, you know, as an employee. And on top of that, if you want to build incentives into the structure, that's fine. But pay for performance exclusively, it's probably a bad idea.
Is it exclusive, Stephen?
No, I actually I'm going to qualify people, and I will put them on a base for the first 2 weeks. But I do disagree. Because I have been employing people owning major corporations throughout the U.S. For many, many years of my professional career, and I've employed a lot of people with bases, and you get a lot of applicants that it's just too hard for an employer to tell who is lazy and not really motivated and just looking for the paycheck, or those who are more into money hungry and making a future for themselves. And this paid by performance answers that question. If people know right up front that they're going to be paid by performance, you're going to weed through the people and cut your overhead, cut your cost dramatically.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it, and we wish you and your company the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Let's get another call, and this is Wendy, who's with us from Oakland, California.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for the show. It's really great. I'm a 42-year-old waitress with a master's degree, and back in 1997, my partner and I opened a small restaurant in Oakland, and we were just hugely busy, really successful for 5 years, and then, you know, everything happened. 9/11 happened, the, you know, dot-com bust happened, and we had to close our restaurant, and there was a whole combination of factors that when we went from a thriving, busy, you know, employer of 30 people to nothing. And part of it is that, I mean, our revenue dropped by 25% to 30%. My regular customers who were coming in 3 times a week were coming in once every 6 months. And they would stop me on the street and they'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I haven't been in. And when that happens, when hundreds of people do that, you just have no choice but to, you know, but to close your doors. But the other thing I just wanted to comment about was, it seemed to me like we were taxed every which way, from a tax for merely being an LLC to paying property taxes on a building that I didn't own. And it would just seem that if there were any tax breaks for small business, I mean, it was really the thing that put us over the edge. When we first started our our business and decided to become a limited liability corporation because it was better for our investors and everything else. The government got wind of it, and 2 years into our business, I got a bill for $10,000 back taxes because they decided to start taxing LLCs. And it just felt like, you know, you make a buck and then they want three. And it's really too bad because my little restaurant was fantastic. We were in the paper all the time, and then 40 people were out of work, and a number of them still are out of work.
David Weiss, Wendy seems to be describing a situation that, I don't think she's alone.
Well, no, I mean, in two ways. Of course, obviously, the restaurant business took a huge hit after September 11th. People just stopped going out to eat, and there's not much you can do about that. That was the result of the terror attacks and people's changing attitudes.
But what about the tax part?
The tax part, I think the real problem with taxes in this country is they're way too complicated.
Yeah.
One of the advantages, when you start taxing, you have taxes on top of taxes on top of other taxes. If we just cut through the mess and have a simpler tax code, I'm not a strong believer in a value-added tax, but at least it's simpler, and it makes sure things get taxed once and only once.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wendy, thanks very much for the call.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the show.
Okay, bye-bye. Concern about the number of white-collar jobs leaving the United States and heading overseas has led some states like Michigan to consider legislation that would bar the practice. Not everyone thinks outsourcing of jobs is necessarily a bad thing. Joining us now on the phone is Michael Mandel, chief economist at Businessweek magazine, and it's good to have you on the program.
Good afternoon.
You've written a commentary that will appear in an upcoming issue of your magazine that argues that outsourcing, as it's called, is not necessarily a bad thing for the U.S. economy. Why?
Well, let's just actually take one step back and talk about the white-collar outsourcing that everybody seems to be so worried about. And when you look at the numbers, it turns out that unemployment rates for educated workers have not gone up that much. And if there's any pain that's going on, it's the manufacturing jobs that are leaving, which are just pouring out of the country. So mm-hmm. there's a misconception at this point. We are still in an economy where we are adding jobs at the top and we're losing jobs at the bottom. So that's really the first thing. The second thing that's important is that the U.S. advantage is in innovation, it's in new industries. That's where the growth is going to be. That's what's going to generate the jobs. If we don't get the innovation, the jobs will go overseas, and there's nothing that will replace them. If we get innovation, if we get the creation of new stuff like we had in the 1990s, yeah, then some jobs go overseas, and we generate new and better ones, and you have the sort of boom that we had in the 90s.
One of the things you talk about is that it's inevitable that these kinds of white-collar jobs are going to go overseas once they become routinized. Things like, a lot of computer work that was once seen as expert work is now is not expert work
anymore.
Well,
remember, we go through this every 10 years or so. The last time we went through this was the early 90s, and if you remember, people were worried. They talked about white-collar recession. They talked about that the U.S. was hollowing itself out, that all the good jobs are going over to Japan. Do you remember that?
Hmm. Yep.
Okay. And that went on 92, 93, 94. There was actually a lot of stuff that was written in 94 about that. Then all of a sudden, well, we had something new and we were off and running again. And I think that's the exact same thing that could happen this time, which is that, yes, the jobs go overseas. They go to places which are cheaper. And the U.S. does what it should be doing, which it takes on the high-risk, innovative tasks, because we're the richest country, and frankly, that's what we should be doing.
Well, isn't it possible that your optimism about innovation and risk-taking could be misplaced? That the skill
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Look, there's no guarantees here, because when you get into the business of new technologies, they're not predictable. You can't tell which ones are going to happen, which ones that are not, even when you're almost right on top of them. That was my point about 1994. A lot of people were very gloomy in 94. There was no sign at that point that 95 was going to mark the beginning of a big boom. So I could go through a list of potential new technologies at this point without actually being able to tell which ones were going to take off, and indeed, you know, whether any of them were going to take off at all. So I guess the point is, yes, there's a lot of uncertainty, and we, as the richest country in the world, are in the best position to assume that uncertainty.
And we should continue to try to strive for what you call the next rung up the economic ladder rather than try to protect what we've got.
Absolutely. There is no history that says that protecting is the right thing to do. What we need to do is that if we move up to the next rung, if we move up to the next innovative industry, then we leave room for everyone else. And it's better for the world economy, and it's much, much better for us because the people, remember, the last caller who had the restaurant in Oakland, what she was getting is she was getting the income that was generated by the innovative boom of the 1990s.
Yeah, then it went poof.
And then it went, well, it didn't really go poof. It just sort of, it fell off the top. Okay, it is still a much, much bigger industry than it was in 95, and what you need is if you don't get the innovation, you know what happens? You end up with a stagnant, slow-growing economy, and it doesn't generate a lot of jobs, and it ends up looking a lot more like Europe with high unemployment rates. If you want the sort of 4% unemployment rates that we had in the 1990s and the vibrant small businesses, you need an economy which is focusing on the innovation, on what comes next, rather than looking back to protecting what we had before.
Michael Mandel, thanks very much. Michael Mandel is chief economist at Businessweek magazine, and he spoke to us on the phone from Millburn, New Jersey. And we're going to get a reaction from Jared Bernstein and David Weiss. I wanted to get put it in the context of this email that we got from Michael Callan. He writes, all the major defense and big commercial companies are outsourcing high-tech and middle-class jobs to places like India, he puts in quotes. With the outsourcing of jobs goes the outsourcing of demand, and there goes our economy. Eventually, the world economy will suffer, he concludes, since we are such a pivotal part of the world economy. And Jared, why don't you go first?
Well, I suspect your message board is lighting up with calls and emails exactly like that one, and I think Michael Mandel is being much too dismissive of this problem. He's correct in the sense that it's not a massive problem. It's not the problem that's driving the jobless recovery. However, there's one factual mistake he made that's very important. He said that white-collar unemployment rates haven't gone up that much. In fact, if you look at the unemployment rates of computer scientists, they are far higher than they've ever been. They've gone from about 2% to about 6%. That's an historically unprecedented jump. I mean, these folks are facing a huge slump. That's where the seeds of the recession were actually planted. He also said it's never, that history shows us protecting certain industries never the right thing to do. In fact, history often shows the opposite. Protecting young, vital industries has often helped us, given those industries a chance to grow in a protected venue where they can be free of competition. So I think that the problem is real in the sense that there are many folks in that sector who were told over the course of the 1990s, if you gear up with the skills in the new economy, you will be insulated from the negative attributes of globalization. And look what's happening. These very folks are seeing their jobs outsourced. So I do think that it's a problem that we should be mindful of.
David Weiss?
I think I come down a little closer to Mike's side than to Jared's for a couple of reasons. Fundamentally, there's no difference between outsourcing white-collar jobs versus outsourcing blue-collar jobs, except that most of the people doing the commenting are white-collar employees. And therefore, we take it a lot more seriously and personally than we do the blue-collar jobs. But in terms of the numbers, the jobs that are getting lost outside the United States are still 90% blue-collar. Not white-collar.
I would even say probably higher than 90%. I mean, I totally agree with David's point. But let me ask David a question, if I might. I mean, are you at all concerned that what happened to manufacturing could happen to information technology? Not now, but years down the road.
I mean,
our manufacturing sector is decimated.
But that's the way it goes. I mean, you're right that, you know, you can make a strong economic argument for protecting infant industries.
Right.
You want high-growth industries. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the politics, what almost always gets protected are old, dying industries, because those are where the voters are employed. And the politics always pushes you to protect exactly the businesses you shouldn't be protecting.
We're speaking with David Weiss and Jared Bernstein. The issue is, how do we create jobs? You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to AJ, and AJ's on the line with us from Concord, New Hampshire.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
As a foreigner living in this country, I'm boggled by what the salaries and wages are here. And if you look at the top graduate of a top business school like Harvard in this country, it's not uncommon for them to command a fee of $100,000 upon graduation. If you look at what the top Indian business schools graduates get, it's about $10,000. The American businessmen I've spoken to have said that it doesn't make sense to pay an American several times what they pay an Indian. I suppose my question to your guests is it not possible that in the long run, in the areas of banking and financial services and accounting and computer programming, that the U.S. will go into decline? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
AJ, thanks very much for the call. David Weiss, why don't you go first?
Well, I think there is an issue here that Americans are being paid more than is competitive with the rest of the world. The way that would normally be fixed is the unemployment rate ought to adjust. Let's start that over again. The exchange rate ought to adjust to make our salaries lower in exchange-adjusted terms to India or Europe.
Weaken the
dollar. It's not happening. But it's not happening because too many countries are tying their currencies to the dollar. Being the reserve currency has eliminated that natural adjustment procedure and gets us caught here in a trap.
Let's go to another email. We just have a couple of minutes left. I started a web company, web development company, an LLC, another limited liability company. This is from Caroline in Kansas City. With a partner, about a week before September the 11th, we hired one full-time employee this February. We are surviving, but items like unemployment taxes and lack of support for health care for small business hurts us tremendously, she puts in capital letters. What incentives is President Bush creating for us as small business owners who are making less than some people on unemployment but have created a job and are working to create more? And Jared?
Well, this is going to be very poor solace for both this writer and Wendy, who called in from a restaurant before. But it is the fact that corporations, whether they're big corporations or LLCs, are paying less as a share of their revenue in taxes now than they were in previous years, and their tax burden has fallen considerably. The Bush plan does have lots of tax breaks for these businesses. It's just that at a time like this, of course they're strapped, and of course it's going to look like paying taxes is the wrong, you know, it makes it very tough to compete. However, their tax burden is actually low in historical terms.
And David Weiss, I want your comment, but again, we're asking about small business because traditionally, that's the engine of job growth.
Well, I think one of the issues here is health care, though. That's a very serious issue right now. The health care costs are rising both in absolute terms and as a share of total salaries. It's basically eating up all our productivity gains paying for health care. This is a problem with the system. We have a broken health care system in the United States. We're spending twice as much on health care as any other country, as most other countries in the world. And we have the lowest life expectancy of any of the major industrial countries. If you're paying a lot of money and you're getting results, it's one thing. But we're paying more than everybody else, and the evidence is we're getting worse health care.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there, and it's clearly an issue that, regrettably, we may have to come back to. So, Jared Bernstein, thanks very much for being
with
us.
My pleasure.
Jared Bernstein is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute here with us in Studio 3A. David Weiss, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's. He joined us from our bureau in New York. When we come back from our break, we'll talk about how the car industry is faring in this economy. Plus, we'll check in on what's going on in Saudi Arabia today with Time Magazine's Scott McCloud. The British government announced a suspension of flights to Saudi Arabia today. We'll find out what's behind that. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.